Welcome back, Sports Talk for Fans by Fans, episode 25, doing NBA playoff segment, getting into the NBA finals. I got Tejas here with me. How you doing, Tejas?
Doing good. How you doing, Brian?
Doing great. Can't wait to see this series. Quickly before we start, we have Facebook group and page. If you guys want to join the group, we post a lot of polls and questions on there and helps drive discussions, interactions with you guys. So if you guys want to do that, we'll be posting things definitely about the NBA finals as we go, and you guys can feel free to get involved in that one. So getting right into this, Tejas, recapping these playoffs, I think the one big thing that's kind of interesting to talk about that's kind of probably taking over all the headlines are the amount of injuries. And with, you know, when we had even four teams left, it's kind of crazy because, you know, there was no Kawhi at all for the Clippers. Giannis with that almost disgusting looking hyperextended knee, which I'm glad he didn't get seriously hurt. CP3 part of the COVID conspiracy. We got Booker wearing the mask, the Rip Hamilton mask with his broken nose. Trae Young stepping on a ref's foot and tweaking his ankle, which unfortunately kind of ended the Hawks. But do you feel like we kind of got robbed on the star power potential of the conference final stages?
Yes. I mean, we'll definitely get into this more, but, you know, I want to see Kawhi Leonard go in. I would have wanted to see Trae Young at 100%, you know, LeBron and Davis, you know. So, I mean, it's honestly, you look at probably what the odds are going to be for next year. You'll probably have Lakers, Nets, and the Clippers being like three of, you know, probably the top three seeds, you know, for title odds. So, you know, it is unfortunate, but I'm still enjoying it. And I was actually thinking about this, you know, frankly, are you having more fun this playoffs than bubble playoffs with the Lakers kind of just dominating?
Yeah, I think, last year we had the kind of the Cinderella Miami Heat story. And then this year, it's almost like we have the Atlanta Hawks just, but without the bubble. So it's kind of, you know, maybe are they more real than what the Heat were is what I'm going to be kind of curious on is what the Hawks are going to be next year, which we'll talk about later. But I think I am enjoying this more. It feels more real, but it's just the injury. So I think maybe next year we'll finally break the streak of kind of odd playoffs. That's kind of, I guess, the way I'm looking at that. So I don't want to take anything away from the Bucks and the Suns, but it's definitely, it does feel weird. So let's go get into breaking down the series. We're going to break down the Western Conference first. The Suns beat the Clippers in six. So Tay just had that right. I think you've picked the Suns right pretty much on everyone going through. And I keep doubting them because I keep trying to find flaws and I'm just absolutely wrong every time. So it's kind of nice to see them getting through, because I do want to see Chris Paul win one. And once again, it's kind of be hard for me to kind of pick the more of the Bucks. The one thing I will stand by today, just I did say, I find it hard for any team to beat the top three and coming out of the East. So it's probably one I'm going to keep sticking to. But let's get into this one first. I think with the Suns, you kind of have to wonder, you know, did they ever get a real test getting into the playoffs? You know, they played the Clippers without Kawhi, they played the Nuggets without Murray, the Lakers without AD, kind of like you talked about. And now they're playing the Bucks, who have Giannis hurt. And I think the report I just saw was he's trying to get back to game shape. He's going to test his knee out on the court today. But there's nothing finite, and it's progressing to get better. But there's no for sure that Giannis is going to play game one. So, you know, Suns are kind of dodging lots of bullets. So, I mean, do you think that's going to hurt or help them? Or do you think it really matters with what the Suns are doing?
Yeah, no, I think that matters. You know, I think Bucks will be the best defense they've played, and it'll be interesting to see if their offense looks. And again, that's because Anthony Davis wasn't there a lot for those Lakers teams. You know, but I think Denver was really bad defensively, and the Clippers were maybe pretty good, but didn't have Kawhi. But you know, I do think that the Bucks can kind of be an elite defense if they dial in at times, and then so that'll be interesting to see if, you know, in this series. So I do think that's, you know, in it kind of a flaw as far as the Suns' way there. But, you know, but Milwaukee certainly doesn't have, you know, with Trae Young missing time and Brooklyn missing time, you can make that same argument for them. So this is just the Survivor Series, the Survivor playoffs, as you know, as we were talking about earlier. So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. And talking about their defensive, I think the Suns and the Bucks were ranked 1 and 2 in defense. So could be an interesting matchup on the defensive side. And, you know, I guess the other thing that was kind of interesting in the series is when the Suns won the first two games of the series and then the Clippers won that third game, I was kind of like, oh, crap, it's going to happen again. The Clippers are going to make this comeback. And they got stopped. Luckily, I guess if you're a Suns fan, they luckily got stopped. But it's just kind of weird. The Clippers weren't able to capitalize on the first two games of the series, which is, you know, I don't know if that's bad coaching or what it is, like why it takes two games to figure a team out. But when they didn't have Chris Paul and you can't win, and I think Payne's the leading scorer in the Suns game too, and you couldn't win, it's kind of, you know, the Clippers done themselves in with or without Kawhi. They, you know, I think it was kind of unfortunate. But I think the weird thing was it looked like Booker couldn't really shoot with that mask. In the series, he shot 38% and 28 from three, which is kind of unusual. So you think that mask is going to continue to have an effect on Chris or on Booker going forward?
I think he'll have a better series than he did, you know, against the Clippers. But, you know, I don't know if he'll be in, you know, as much of a zone as, you know, as we saw him when he was, you know, in round one with the Lakers, where he just was incredible and just didn't miss a shot. So, yeah. You know, it'll be interesting. You know, I guess Holiday will be in his face as much as Beverly was. You know, and we'll get into that more in our finals preview, I guess. But, you know, I do think that, you know, at least in terms of the major injuries, you know, that's one of the less ones, you know, compared to Paul's shoulder and whatever's going on with Giannis right now.
Yep. With the Clippers, which were you more impressed by, Paul George carrying that team or the growth of Reggie Jackson? Because to me, like I think I already said it before, but I'm not used to seeing Reggie Jackson like this. Like he was a bona fide number two. He attacked. He hit a lot of shots I didn't know he could hit. So which were you more impressed with, Paul George carrying the team or the growth of Reggie Jackson?
I was more impressed with the growth of Reggie Jackson, you know, kind of both of those guys, frankly. I think, you know, I wanted to see them do it in the playoffs, and both of them, you know, passed this year and with the flying colors. But I was more impressed with the growth of Reggie Jackson. I thought he was someone that you just couldn't play in the playoffs, and Rondo would get all his minutes, and he just was incredible. So he really, you know, changed my mind on that. Paul George, on the other hand, you know, like he had great Pacers series, and so we had kind of seen it before. We definitely didn't see it last year, but we had seen it before. And, you know, they throughout stretches in the regular season when, you know, they rested Kawhi a ton, and George always kind of stepped up to the plate. So, you know, it wasn't completely unrealistic to see that, but you know, Reggie Jackson being as good as he was, and then Terrence Mann also a freak and was just awesome. So that was the surprising things to me.
Yeah, Terrence Mann definitely had a couple phenomenal games offensively. So next, I guess we're going to talk about here in a second what the Clippers need to do to get better. But for the Clippers, their cap for next year, I think they're $33 million over the cap next year if they bring everyone back. The cap is set $112 million. If they bring everyone back, their cap would be $148 million. The kind of the people on the edge right now is Kawhi. Has a $36 million player option, and then Ibaka has a $9 million player option. So if they both don't come back, they're under the cap. And I'm pretty sure they can work it out. They can re-sign and stay there if they wanted to, if they decline those options or play them out, whatever. But, man, that's a lot to be over the cap. And on top of that, they have Reggie Jackson and Batum, who are both starters, who are free agents after this year. So I think, knowing that kind of information, what do you think the Clippers have to do to, you know, get back to where they were this year or next year? Is it as simple as bringing everyone back and Kawhi needs to be healthy? Because that may be kind of difficult with, you know, Batum and Jackson not possibly coming back with the financial issues. But what do you think they got to do to get back to this level today just next year?
Yeah, no, I'm pro keep it and run it back. So, you know, Steve Ballmer got that money. Jackson was so good for him, I think you gotta try and lock him up, and same with, you know, Kawhi, you can't let him go anywhere. So, you know, I think you do whatever it takes to keep those guys and pay the tax if you have to. What do you think?
It's kind of crazy because I'm looking at this, they're so far over the cap already, and they're actually going to be $12 million over the luxury tax threshold. But like you said, Ballmer, you know, billionaire, doesn't really probably, money does not matter to him. He probably burns it every night, that smokes cigars and stuff like that. So the thing that's just for me is, you know, Reggie Jackson, you want him to come back. Kawhi, you obviously want him to come back and pair him with George. But then where are you going to free some of this money up to sign Jackson? I think, you know, Rondo, he's got 1 year left at 7.5. Ibaka, 1 year left at 9.7. Beverly, 1 year left at 14.3. So, you know, if in a perfect world, if you can get on the cap and figure it out somehow, I think the one thing I kind of noticed is they don't have a three-point shooter that they can trust to hit these open shots, because they have a bunch of guys that can create and generate twos for themselves. I was looking at the stats, and I think their best three-point shooter in that last series was Cousins, who shot 43%. He's only 3 of 7, but if you want to kind of go more volume in that series, who shot more than 10 attempts with the best percentage, that was Reggie Jackson at 36%. And your superstar Paul George only shot 29%. So I think, you know, having that three-point threat somewhere out there is, I think, what they need. And then the other thing you could also say is, I think we expected Rondo to be kind of that legit backup point guard, and he really wasn't it. He's going to be 36 years old next year. You know, do you think they should bring him back, Tejas? Because with the way he kind of played, it looked like he had a lot of turnovers. He couldn't really gel with the offense in the playoffs. So what do you think about Rondo?
Yeah, no, if they can get Rondo off of Rondo's money, I think that one's a no-brainer. Just in terms of the three-point shooting, my eyeball test, you know, Kennard was kind of money every time he was in the game. And you know, I actually, like, you know, just it felt like it was going in. So, you know, I think he, you know, for someone that didn't play in the regular season and then another guy that really found the role with them, you know, in those playoffs as that kind of a shooter. The Beverly 14 million, that's a good one. You know, it basically, I think Beverly is great for them in their small ball lineups in the way he rebounds. But then, you know, if it just looks like, you know, if it's between keeping Reggie Jackson or Beverly, then sorry, Pat Bev, you've had a great run, but you know, we got to do this here.
Yeah. And Luke Kennard shot, in that series, he shot 32% from three, which is, you know, it felt like he was hitting a lot of shots, but he was struggling from three-point range. I think he had every shot inside three-point range, but he shot 32%. And I think the thing that I did not know until recently was Kennard's coming off of his rookie deal, and he has an extension that kicks in next year. So he's making 12.7 next year. That's a big jump for someone that was kind of a, you know, didn't seem like he played a lot sometimes. So they're paying him a lot of money. You know, he's getting paid. He would be the fourth highest paid player if Beverly's gone next year, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, it's I think those guys are all good players and probably movable. Just how many teams are, you know, under the cap and would want to take them. But, you know, like, and also, you know, do you have to attach a pick or something for any of these that, like, but like, I would feel like Zubac, Kennard, Rondo, Beverly would all be pretty movable. None of them are pretty really long-term contracts or anything.
I think this goes back to the thing I keep saying is OKC, you know, how many contracts can they take on? You know, this is another team. I think the Clippers had the 25th pick, or I can't remember what pick they have this year, but OKC,
probably,
they can take
probably,
on.
Probably traded, you know, because OKC has them all already.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm looking. I just want to see how many picks OKC can take on, when how much money they're going to eat for all these contracts. Put Beverly out there or some crap like that. So, all right, let's move on to the other series on the Eastern side. The once again in six, the Bucks won a six, but I think this is the big one where injuries kind of played a big toll. So, kind of recap for people. Let's go to game three. The series is tied 1-1 in game three in the third quarter. Trae Young steps on the ref's foot, rolls his ankle. And pretty much just is not the same after that, and pretty much does not play the rest of the series almost. At least he's not the same when he does play. For the fourth quarter of that game, in game three, the Bucks go on to outscore the Hawks by 13 in the fourth quarter, ended up winning the game by 11. So you could say, with the Hawks being at home, that the Hawks should have or probably could have won game three, because they had control kind of. So, you know, that series, I think it looks very different if Trae Young doesn't get hurt. And the other thing to look at also, Tejas, is, you know, if you take away the two superstars from each team, you know, Giannis got hurt game four. I think it was more obvious that Trae Young is by far more valuable to his team than Giannis, which is kind of crazy to say, because Giannis is an MVP winner. So do you agree with that, that Trae Young, that injury in taking out both superstars benefited the Hawks? The Bucks.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Just, you know, their depth behind Trae Young wasn't good. And, you know, I think it was kind of like they gave Lou Williams the keys to kind of be the primary scorer, player maker. And, you know, I don't think that gets it done. And, you know, certainly Bucks had better options with, you know, Middleton and just other guys like, you know, just stepping up like Bobby Portis and things like that.
I think you got to be impressed with the Bucks and these additions they made to help Giannis and then even carry the team without Giannis, because they game five's leading scorer was Brook Lopez with 33 points. And then game six closeout was Middleton with 32 points. So I don't think anyone expected Brook Lopez to be the leading scorer in any game, but he was in game five. So going on to the Hawks, you know, I think if we had a healthy Trae Young, if we had a healthy Giannis, do you think that series would have played out different, or do you think the Bucks still win that at six or seven?
I would still think the Bucks won in six or seven. I just felt like they were much more physical. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, the Hawks just at this point can't really D up, in my opinion. And so, you know, I think the Bucks were kind of both, you know, more veteran, more savvy. You really saw it in the games in Milwaukee, where it was just like the Hawks, you know, the whistles just weren't there. And you know, Bucks were just getting on these huge runs. And you know, you never saw that really the other way around, where I felt like the Hawks were just kind of, you know, physically dominating and running the Bucks off the court. So I do think that, you know, the Bucks kind of were the better team in the series. How about, where are you on that? Do you think that in a different world we could be watching Trae Young in the finals?
I want to say yes, just because it was so fun to watch the Hawks and watch Trae Young throughout the playoffs. But it is hard to go against the Bucks with a healthy Giannis. I mean, because he can get to the basket at will. If he wants to go, he's going to go, and you can't stop him. I mean, the Hawks have no one to stop him. But it's crazy, because when you look at all the games the Hawks played, the games they won, they won games by 2 or 3 points, and then they would get blown out, you know. And so whatever games were close, they found a way to scrap out and win. So I think it would have been interesting, because if the Hawks would have taken game three and had that 2-1 lead, you know, who knows what would have happened? Because I think that, yes, the Bucks would have more games in hand at home, but I don't know, just watching them play, especially against the Sixers, I thought it was just interesting to see. I think it's a big part of Nate McMillan just kind of taking that team and coaching them the right way. So I'm very excited to see what they do next year. A lot more, I think they're a lot more real. I think they're more real than what the Heat did last year. Do you think the Hawks are more of a real team to be kind of a consistent runner of the playoffs next year? Because we saw the Heat just kind of disappear in game one of the revenge game of the Bucks. Do you think the Hawks, this is just a one-time kind of thing, or do you think the Hawks are a legitimate threat as a four seed or higher going into the East next year?
I think four seed-ish is kind of fair, but I don't see them in the kind of title hunt. And again, it's just kind of, you know, related to that physicality. You know, if you're playing guys like Gallinari and Bogdanovich and Trae Young, you know, in my opinion, you have like three defensive weaknesses in your lineup. And then if you don't play those guys and you play guys like Cam Reddish and Hunter, you know, maybe those guys can develop into something good, but they're pretty young players, and I just don't think they're there yet. And so, you know, honestly, in terms of like, you know, your buddy would be happy, man. I'd put Boston or Miami. Like, I think that they might have better years than the Hawks next year.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great point you make, because, you know, if Cam Reddish does develop, DeAndre Hunter do develop, and you add that to the core they currently have, that's a really damn good team. But that's a big if that happens. So getting into this, you know, with them being closed out, what can the Hawks do better next year? Well, the Hawks are currently $19 million out of the cap next year. However, the thing to consider is next year is the last year on the rookie deal for Kevin Huerter and Trae Young. So they're going to have to start looking forward on that one to, you know, lock them up. So also John Collins is said to be a free agent, so he was kind of a big part of their team, but, you know, could they have done without him? Maybe. I'm not really sure. I don't know if they're gonna be able to afford him and keep all everyone else, because Gallinari's contract is just crazy. He's got two more years after this year at $20 million and $21 million. That's a lot of money to pay someone that is a huge defensive liability, and, you know, is streaky as a shooter. So I think they need to figure out what to do with that contract. So maybe send him back to OKC, another dumping ground. But so what do you think the Hawks need to do next year? Because they have more flexibility than the Clippers. What do you think they need to do to kind of take that next step? And I think you already kind of answered the question earlier, but
Yeah, no. I mean, so I definitely, Reddish showed something in that last game of the playoffs. And so, I want to see what he can do in more time. You know, he was really physical when he came in, really confident in shooting three balls. And so, obviously, I'm a UVA guy that just swears by DeAndre Hunter in our national championship run. So I'm very biased there, but I think he's a hell of a player, too. I think those guys could give them a lot more physicality. I think they should re-sign Collins. I would be interesting if you have guys like Hunter and Reddish playing, can you get by with Collins minutes at the five and just have three-point shooting spots all over the court? And would those lineups hold up? I don't think they played that at all during the regular season, and those are kind of lineups I'd be very curious about.
Yeah, well, they got Clint Capella locked up for 2 years already. So do you think they could get by with him at the five and not Collins? Because Collins are going to have to spend big money to keep Collins next Capella. How do you think that plays out?
Collins is really good for them. And, just definitely in the Bucks series, crashing the offensive boards. And then his flexibility to be able to go out and stretch. I'm a big fan of him. I know he and Trey had some, personality conflicts, where it's one of the things, where – their parents are bad talking each other or something. It was one of those type of Twitter beefs or something. But, I think that kind of, hashed it out in this playoffs, where they really worked well together. And I think they're a good fit. I like Capella too, but, I'm very, kind of unlimited center. I kind of like having put flexibility in your lineups, where you could have a wicked 3-point small shooting kind of lineup, and then also have a big lineup that you don't get beat up by other huge centers when you play Embiid or something. So that's kind of what I meant by that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, with how offense is targeted defensive players, switching people off and getting a defender that's more favorable for offensive sets. When your defense has potentially Gallinari, Bogdanović, Herder, Lou Williams, even Trae Young, there's a lot of defensive liabilities there that you don't want. For me, I just want them to find some kind of defensive stopper that can play in the backcourt. Someone that doesn't have to be a starter. Just you can bring in for when you need defense, like old school Andre Iguodala. And I know they're not easy to find, but I think they got to find someone if they want to have a chance to compete to even get. Because I have a hard time believing they're going to get past the second round next year unless they make some major change, add someone. It's got to be a defensive grit player like a Jimmy Butler without the offense, someone like that. I just don't know if that exists out there.
I'm with you, and I thought that was just the biggest difference in the Bucks series. At the end of Game Six, basically the guys just said, Drew Holiday's playing defense on all five Hawks or something. The announcer, that PJ Tucker was another one where I just felt this huge physical presence that the Hawks don't have.
Yeah. All right, let's get into this. Let's get into the NBA Finals preview now. So we got the Suns and the Bucks. I think you got that. You picked those two teams, right?
Again, with Brooklyn, I'm not taking a victory lap here. I feel like I got lucky this year. But yes, no, I picked them. Yeah. I also was stressing their pretty good title odds. I think I had a tweet that lived pretty well where it was like, Bucks plus 700, Hawks, Suns plus 900, and bet those too. So for our one listener, I think we made them some money.
Definitely good. I need to make sure I start putting money aside for next year's and make a little more bets, because I'm only betting baseball and football right now. So, all right, get so into just, this.
The odds for this series are basically the Suns are minus 185, Bucks are plus 155.
Really?
Yeah, so Suns are pretty big favorites here. Game one, Suns are minus 5.5 favorites. I think it's the uncertainty of Giannis. If Giannis was kind of a definite and healthy, I think it would be a very even odd series. But due to the uncertainty around him, it does seem like Vegas is making Suns a pretty heavy favorite.
Yeah, and on top of that, it's also in Phoenix. So I think it's probably those two things combined factoring into that one. So so getting into this with a preview, they play twice in the regular season. And hopefully this is a good sign of things to come for the NBA Finals. The two games were won by Suns, so that's not what I'm getting at. The thing I'm getting at is their wins were combined by 4 points. One of those games went overtime, so they were two really close games. No one was missing either of the games, essentially. All the teams had all their starters, so you know, if it plays out like the regular season, this should be a phenomenal series. So I'm really looking forward to it, even though it doesn't have to start or not the, I guess, the big city names. You know, we're talking Phoenix, Milwaukee, you know, whatever. I don't care. As long as it's good basketball, I don't care. It doesn't have to be New York. Doesn't have to be LA for me. That's me personally. But the one thing that was noticeable in these two games, the Suns had no answer for Giannis, as to most teams both don't. Giannis averaged 40 points per game in the two games that they played. I think he only missed 10 shots or like 14 shots in the whole two game series. So they need to find a way to stop Giannis if he is healthy. The Suns' backcourt of Paul and Booker both averaged over 20 points, both shot about 50%. Chris Paul did his usual of almost having no turnovers, just like every single series he plays. So there's a lot of star power going to this. Just hopefully Giannis is healthy for the fans that aren't out, or the fans outside the Phoenix area. Hopefully we have a healthy Giannis so we can have a great series to watch. So I guess the big question to ask before we get into the breaking down these position groups is, if Giannis is healthy, Tejas, who on the Suns can't stop him? Because they have some people that are, you know, tall and lanky, but in the regular season, they couldn't stop him. So who do you think they got put on him? How do you think they slow him down?
I think it'll probably be Crowder, you know, just being super physical with him. You know, Bridges and Ayton probably playing him in stretches as well. But, you know, I think Crowder would be the main assignment. How do you think that they'll guard him?
It's tough because I thought Crowder and Bridges were taller than they are. They're both 6'6". Giannis is, what, 6'11"? So they got him. What, they got Torrey Craig. Cam Johnson, 6'8". That's a little bit better maybe. The good thing is I guess they have a lot of people they can throw at him. But then, you know, it's just going to be tough either way. I think Crowder is the guy you probably want on him. So that's kind of get someone to get in someone's face. It's a hard-nosed defender. And I think he played on the Heat last year, right?
Yeah, no, he was great for the Heat. And, you know, he's, you know, LeBron, who's probably 2 inches taller than him, he at least bothers him with his physicality. And, you know, he's obviously not going to be able to block Giannis at the rim, but he's going to use his little wide frame to, you know, bang Giannis a good bit and try and create that wall so that Giannis takes jump shots instead of dunking and getting layups for 40 points.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into breaking down each position group. So what we're going to do is we're going to name a position group, name the starters, and we're going to kind of say who we think has the advantage at each position going into this playoffs. And after that, we're going to kind of call out who we think are the top six players of the series, because usually, you know, the series go down to who has the best players wins these series. So at the point guard position, we have the matchup between Jrue Holiday and Chris Paul. You know, me personally, it's kind of hard to ever go against Chris Paul. Now, Jrue Holiday has been phenomenal for the team offensively and defensively, but Chris Paul, just to me, you know, he's the generational point guard. He's exactly what you want on any team, run a team. And he's sneaky good on defense too. I think he doesn't get a lot of credit, even being 35 years old. He's got that wily vet mentality. He knows where to be. He knows how to position himself. So, you know, I think Chris Paul has got the advantage on that. You know, no offense, Jrue Holiday, because he's definitely phenomenal. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I'd go with you and say, you know, Chris Paul as well. And, you know, I obviously Paul had some fantastic games against the Clippers and now looks like he's kind of fully healthy. So I'd give the edge to the Suns there.
All right. So shooting guard, you know, Chris Middleton and Devin Booker. I'll let you lead on that one. Who do you think who's got the advantage in that one?
I'd say Booker. And it's close in that, but you know, Middleton is someone that's just so hot and cold that, you know, like that game six versus the Hawks, he was terrible in the first half. You know, I really think it was everyone else that kind of was keeping them, you know, in the lead in the first half. And then just he got, you know, red hot and, you know, pretty much just made it so that the Hawks couldn't come back in that game and just didn't miss a shot in the second half. So, you know, he's a very polarizing player, and he, you know, this was not a new pattern in that, like that was all in one game, but he's someone that has a terrible game and then a great game and a terrible game. So just that inconsistency would maybe give Booker the edge.
Yeah, I agree with you. But I mean, Booker, the first two series was just so good. In the third series, you know, I mentioned earlier, he shot 38% from the field, 28% from 3-point range, but, you know, he still averaged 25.5 points per game. He still led the Suns at scoring that in the conference finals. And the thing that's kind of, you know, doesn't get spoken about is his ability to get to the free throw line and shoot at the line as good as Chris Paul does. So he got to the line 43 times in that series and made 39 of them. So he shot 91% from the free throw line. So even when he's not hitting his shots, he's still getting those buckets. He's still getting the line, you know, the and ones. So he's definitely a consistent scorer compared to, like you said, Middleton is so streaky. And I think Middleton's a little bit better of a defender, but Booker is just so good offensively that I give him the slight edge over him. So small forward, I guess this is where the position parts get a little mixed up for me. Do you think PJ Tucker or Giannis is small forward for the Bucks? Who'd you list?
So, yeah, no, I mean, I think they might be starting Connaughton too. If we were going to do PJ Tucker, probably makes sense. You know, at least that, I think that part lineup is probably going to be their highest minute lineup. So we'll do PJ Tucker.
I got Bridges at small forward for the Sun. So between those two, who you got?
I got to take my guy PJ Tucker. He was like, I think one of nine in game six.
Yeah.
Just missing open three after open three. But the one he did make is the one that I think sealed the game. And I just think I look and watch and just think PJ Tucker's having the game of his life. And I look and his stat line is like one of two, you know? And so it's like, but I don't know, maybe I'm insane just drinking some too many beers over here, but I swear I'm watching PJ Tucker and I think he's the best player on the court.
I pick Bridges on this slightly just because he has moments where he goes off offensively and he plays good defense. I think PJ Tucker shines when he has someone like Kevin Durant to play against. And I don't know, PJ Tucker on Bridges is kind of a boring matchup for me. It's like the one of all these position groups I don't think I'm really excited to watch, but obviously PJ Tucker will get mixed in. He'll be mixed in to guard different people. I think position wise, he's, you know, cause for the Suns, it's really the guards that drive the team and you have a little bit of Ayton. So, you know, they could go small ball at some point and put PJ Tucker out there. So,
yeah, no, that's, you know, honestly, I think you make a really good point in that this is kind of a weird series where, you know, all their playmaking comes through their guards. So it's Booker, Paul, and Campaign. And so, you know, PJ Tucker, you know, and he can't really guard Ayton either. So he has less of a role in this series than, you know, I think a pretty much, you know, all the playoffs so far. So honestly, you know, they might do a lot of time with more Connaughton Forbes minutes to just get some more shooting on the court. So it might not actually be the best series for my guy PJ Tucker, although God, I love him.
And I think the last two games in the Eastern Conference Finals, they actually had Bobby Portis with Lopez starting up front. So, you know, who knows what happened if Giannis doesn't play, but okay, yeah, so we're split on that one at small forward. For power forward, we're just going to go with best case situation. Giannis is playing. So Giannis is playing at the power forward against Crowder. We probably don't have to talk about this, do we?
Yeah, no, that's a easy one. So.
Okay, so what about if it's just for shits and giggles, what if it's Bobby Portis and Crowder? Who do you got in that one?
Man, Bobby Portis had a hell of a Hawks series, and I've always been a fan of his. So I would even say Bobby Portis. You know, he's someone that Crowder's one that kind of like a PJ Tucker, where, you know, that three just comes in and out. And so when that three's on, you know, he's really, you know, valuable. But he's someone that can, you know, kill them with a, you know, 0-for-6 three-point box score pretty easily.
It's great. This is the series of shooting guards. It's like power forward through shooting guards of defenders and just like sit in the corner and shoot threes. So this, it feels like there's like 10 people in the series that can do that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's just the spacing in this thing and, you know, allowing Giannis to work or allowing Booker and Paul to work. So that's the way it is with these teams.
So let's get a center. We got Brook Lopez and Ayton. I think the thing with DeAndre Ayton is kind of crazy is I think the stat was he's shot above 50%. I think every game this series, he's like in 15 straight games. And they got Brook Lopez, who's just sneaky good in offense and defense. You know, and like I said, he led game five in scoring with 33 points. So he has the potential to dominate against smaller lineups. And the Suns, you know, are a small lineup. You take Ayton out, and I'm kind of scared for the Suns on defense against the Bucks. But who you got between Ayton and Lopez?
Yeah, no, I got Ayton, and it might not be that far ahead. And that, you know, I think Lopez will defend him, you know, pretty good, better than other people have in the past couple of series. So, but, you know, Ayton's just been fantastic. You know, we've talked about how I didn't have faith in him, and then I've retracted that and recanted as much as I can. And, you know, I think he's very intelligent and then just very sure-handed and just so rarely turns the ball over. So I've just been really, really impressed.
I think I almost want to say that Ayton's is the key to the Suns winning if Giannis is fully healthy, just because they need that third person to go with Booker and Paul. So I guess it'll be interesting to see, because, you know, if Giannis is healthy, Giannis could end up guarding Ayton, because I think they're the same height. So that could be kind of an issue for Ayton. You know, it's kind of like I think Ayton had troubles with AD also last year. So that could be one of those situations where, you know, look to see what happens there, because these matchups could go a lot of different ways on who guards who.
Yeah, and flip side too. Like, I would do wonder if Ayton will be quick enough to be able to guard Giannis for stretches, and if they'll try that at all.
Yeah, again, man, I'm scared, because if the Suns lose Ayton, you have, like, I hate watching Saric play. Like, I don't understand how, like, when I watch him play, I'm like, why can't I just play? Because I don't understand. Like, he turns the ball over so much, he hits a couple shots, but he's rough to watch as a backup. There's a huge drop off, but let's get into the bench. Who do you think is a better bench between the two? With I guess the top three I got for the Bucks is being Forbes, Connaughton, and Portis, and the Suns, Payne, you know, Cam Johnson, and Saric, probably the top three on the bench for the Suns. Maybe who do you think has a better bench there?
I think the Suns. I think basically Cam Payne is probably my Charlie Kelly wild card player of the series.
Yeah, definitely.
I think, you know, he really adds an element that will, you know, I really feel like the Bucks haven't had any kind of bench scoring pop. You know, maybe they have a guy like that will make some open threes for them, but absolutely no one that can create that comes off the bench. Whereas, you know, the campaign coming in and creating, I think, will be a good thing that will take this load off of Chris Paul and Booker if it's like a really tough, you know, series.
I'd be curious to see if the Suns try to go Golden State and just go freaking go Payne, Booker, and Chris Paul, just to see if they can just do something different against the Bucks. Not they probably don't need to, but if Ayton gets in foul trouble, and like I said, I'm really terrified about that. I got the Bucks though, just because in this situation Giannis is fully healthy, and that drives Portis to the bench. I just love Portis off the bench. Condon's okay, you know, he's a good 3-point shooter. He's an okay role player. But yeah, so of all the bench players, Cam or Payne is definitely the best performance whole playoff. So, but I give the edge to the Bucks. So we're split on that one. Coach, last one we got here, Monty Williams over Budenholzer. I'm going Monty Williams. What about you?
Yeah, Monty Williams. See, I think the Bucks, I mean, the Suns have been the best coach team in the year. It always seems like they're running something that makes sense. And, you know, the Bucks have been driving me. Budenholzer was fired, right? Wasn't Rick Carlisle going to be their coach, you know, a couple weeks ago? You know, I think just so many times that offense just looks so ugly, you know, with Giannis just hitting shooting threes. And so, you know, I don't know how much of that is Budenholzer and how much of that is on your superstar, but it does just seem like there was a lot of times where that offense was stagnant and the players just weren't in the best place to succeed.
Yeah, I agree completely with that. So if by position breakdowns, we both favor the Suns, it looks like, on this. So, you know, by that, by that logic, the Suns should have the better team, maybe. Well, I guess we'll see. But let's get into the top six players. We'll go from six down to one. Do you have them written down in order? Because I have them in order in front of mine in order in front of me, Tejas.
Yeah, no, I have them. We can just hit it real quick. So my top six was Giannis, Booker, Middleton, Paul, Ayton, Holiday.
Okay, so we definitely have the same people, just different orders. So I have Giannis 1, Paul 2, Booker 3, Middleton 4, Holiday 5, and Ayton 6. So, I guess you got Paul 4, right? Who's your 2 was Booker?
Yeah, so Booker 2, and then we had you know, Ayton and Holiday flipped, but mm-hmm. You know, basically I think by that you know, just as good as Chris Paul is, I think Booker's been their kind of primary scorer most of these playoffs. And, you know, obviously certain games where campaign was playing, you know, they didn't miss a beat. And I just think that's all Booker's, you know, what we were talking about as far as why we think he's better than Middleton. It's just that, you know, it's throughout the whole game, he's a dominant force and just has been there night after night for them.
Yeah. All right. So let's get into our prediction. So my prediction, it's kind of got an asterisk next to it. It's probably not fair. You know, it's one of those things. It's the Giannis injury. If Giannis is hurt, I got the Suns in seven. But if Giannis is healthy, I actually have the Bucks in six, which is, you know, very different than what your predictions say. But you've been more right on your predictions than me. It's just I think with Giannis at least, you know, 80%, I'm going to go Bucks just because I just think he causes so many problems for them. But I'm happy either way. Like, honestly, what do you got?
Yeah, no, it's I'm going to go Suns in six. And I think it's going to be a really good series and really close series. But, you know, the mindset on it was maybe the Suns squeak out a couple, like, close games. And mm-hmm. then kind of win one or two kind of dominant fashion. And so it's like, you know, Milwaukee's not winning any close games under my my guess here.
Okay. So I'm just going to give a finite answer since I gave you two answers. I'm going to go Bucks in seven. I'm going to meet myself in the middle on that one. So I'm going to go Bucks in seven just because I have to save face by saying those top three teams in the East are unbeatable. So, but once again, I'm probably going to be wrong. So to wrap this up, do you have any other bets, any odds to look at, Tejas, besides that initial one you gave out?
No, I don't have anything else. What I was extremely curious to see, like, what were the Giannis kind of props? And, you know, like, for game one, how many points would he be at? And, like, you know, would this be a very tasty, he's going to play and he's going to have, like, 10 points? But they actually just took him off the board. So, you know, overall, I don't think that there's, like, I didn't see any too many great angles to, like, hit. So I really don't have too many finals bets right now for you.
Yeah, it's all good. All right. So we'll probably recap after the finals are over, and then we'll have an off season kind of preview on the next podcast we have out there. So is there any final words, any things you're looking forward to most in this series that we didn't cover already?
Nothing. I got nothing. I'm looking forward to it. You know, the pause was just thinking, oh, you know, I was going to name drop some celebrities from Milwaukee and Phoenix and couldn't come up with one name. Who's going to be there?
Oh my God. I don't know. I have nothing.
I think there's like a really fat guy that chugs beer during the quarter breaks. that's
like offensive lineman for the Packers that's going to sit up.
That's where I'm at.
Bakhtiari or whatever. All right, well, cool. All right, well, it's good talking Bay with you again. Thanks everyone for listening. That's episode 25, so we'll get you guys probably in a couple weeks with the next NBA episode. Thanks for listening. Hope you guys have a good one.